And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 1st, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Very well, very well. So, Mariah, you probably heard over the last two or three months stories about children, literally children, protesting against the consequences of climate change. Of course, on the show, we've talked for a long time about the Juliana court case, which is basically high school kids suing the federal government over misuse of the air and water. But things took a turn late last year when a young, Finnish or Swedish girl, Greta Thunberg, she went on strike and started taking Fridays off from school because she said, what did it matter? Climate change is going to ruin her future. And that kind of took off. Almost simultaneous with that was another youth-driven movement called the Sunrise Movement, which, again, has been around. But mostly it's sort of been local action on the part of the Sunrise Movement. At the turn of the last election, last November, about that same time, the Sunrise Movement did a sit-in in Nancy Pelosi's office, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez went. It was this big moment, right? For the Green New Deal. Do you remember that at all, Mariah, when all those kids sat in Nancy Pelosi's office and there was this moment just after the election, right?
Yeah, I mean, that may have been AOC's, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's sort of, I mean, of course, when she took off, you know, was elected, that was a big deal too. But I think she kind of launched herself into the spotlight in some ways with that. That's the first time I really was like, oh, look at this. We have an excellent ally in her as far as, you know, climate issues go.
So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, with help from a lot of people, has subsequently put forward the Green New Deal package, which, again, we've talked about, and I hope to continue talking about because it's very important. But the Sunrise Movement, at the same time, in parallel, was doing grassroots work, showing up at different members of Congress's offices. I know that recently there was a group outside Representative Neal's office here in Massachusetts to try and convince him to support the Green New Deal. There have been numerous, in fact, the other day, there were a whole bunch of arrests of these college-age kids in Mitch McConnell's office, right? There was a whole deal. But in the age of Twitter, everything went viral last Friday, Saturday, when a bunch of, say, seventh-grade kids with clearly some adults or older kids shepherding them along in ostensibly under the Sunrise Movement sort of heading, went to see Dianne Feinstein. And I'll tell a story, Mariah. Can you tell a story of what happened when the children went to see Dianne Feinstein?
Yeah.
It's a neutral story in a way. I mean, because we're going to have to debate. There's ups and downs with this whole thing, right?
Right. I mean, so it sounds like they kind of went and said, you know, you need to support the Green New Deal. And she said, I've been around a long time. I know what I'm doing here. You young whippersnappers come in and think you can tell me how to do my job. And I've been around the block. I know how it goes. And I was elected. I was elected by almost a million vote plurality. She said, and she said the Green New Deal can't be paid for. And the Senate, the Republicans in the Senate won't support it. So she sort of views it as a dead end. And said, look, let me do my thing. I've got something I'm working on, and it's better. And then from what I read, this was an article in The New Yorker. From what I read, the thing that she's working on is maybe sort of, it was The New Yorker called it warmed over versions of Obama-era environmental policy. So sort of just basically not aggressive enough. And I think it was... I think it was in this New Yorker article, not positive, but at one point someone said, you know, she said that she's been doing, you know, her work for 30 years. And the article I was reading said, well, the New Yorker article said, that 30 years ago was just about when James Hansen first testified in front of Congress, right? 1988 testified that we need to act on climate change. And if she had taken that and then started really maybe working on this sort of Obama era, as it's called, warmed over Obama era bill, that then we would have had the time to actually do it in the way that she's proposing, in this sort of bipartisan way, and so on and so forth. And the point is that 30 years later, we don't have that much time anymore. We can't be moderate. We don't have the luxury of being moderate.
I guess for me, this was like a whole cluster of the modern zeitgeist in one place, right? Because this video went viral, a 2-minute video of her basically being the dour grandmother yelling at the grandchildren kind of thing. It was very, didn't make her look good. But then there was a 15-minute video. They said, oh, we're supposed to make everything better. And the original video had been cut or out of context, which I'm not sure is actually the case. But I mean, for me, as I say, there's so many things at play here, because I was reading an article that I did not agree with in The Atlantic that our friend DR sent through, basically saying that one of the kids asked Senator Feinstein to be brave. Right? And the person goes on and says, look, Dianne Feinstein was the one that found Harvey Milk shot in his office and then walked out and announced it to the city an hour later. I mean, there's no call for bravery from Dianne Feinstein, right? She has been a rock for 30 years. But I agree in another sense with you, Mariah. So the questions are, is this an example of an out-of-touch politician not understanding the urgency of the moment? Or is it a question of a practical politician who wants to get something done but isn't going to be pushed by these kids? I mean, it's this whole idea, at the crux of thing is how urgent should we be? And I don't know, is the climate movement engaged in a circular firing squad to have this issue with Dianne Feinstein, who, of course, would be on your side? I mean, I think it's fascinating.
So, again, this New Yorker article talked about if you were a lawmaker and I want to say it was Bill McKibben.
Yeah, it is Bill McKibben.
It's Bill McKibben's article. As Bill McKibben, of course, from 350.org fame, among other things,
other famous
a lot of
things,
wonderful books that he's done and so on and so forth. But he said, if a lawmaker is saying that minimum wage should be 30, and then there's another lawmaker who says it should be 8, so then you find somewhere in the middle, 15, and then you argue about it again after the next election. So that's got some push and pull to it. But he says, in the case of the environment, the opponent is not the Chamber of Commerce. The opponent is physics. And physics doesn't negotiate, right? So we may think, Senator Feinstein may know politics, and she may know how to work with the Chamber of Commerce, and she may know how to, dance that dance that you need to do. But this isn't a political game. This is the physics, the laws of the earth, the laws that we have broken mm-hmm. in the earth. Mm-hmm. We can't sort of say, well, this is what we want to happen, so we're just going to do it this way and the earth will follow us. It's not going to.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what you're coming down on is the side of politicians who have been, brave and noble as they may be. They've been there 30 years and you get a little out of touch and you think that you know the right way to get things done, and probably from vast experience. But at the same time, it just doesn't match the urgency of what's happening.
And this is not an issue that we've ever had to deal with before. I mean, we changed the composition, like the balance of the earth. Like that's huge,
I guess it's a microcosm for the big battle that is shaping up, right? It's the battle between people who I would agree with, is that the urgency is overwhelming, that we have run out of time. We cannot do things the way we used to. And if you're not, with us, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of a watermark for a lot of things. I mean, it's I listened to a very long podcast about the French Revolution, and that slowly the French Revolution slowly got more and more frustrating, and they ended up with the terror, right? With chopping off people's heads that were insufficiently devoted, insufficiently pure. Still in all, I mean, I tend to agree with you, Mariah. I mean, the urgency of the moment outweighs whether or not Dianne Feinstein has been there 30 years and thinks she knows what to do. That's not the point, right? And that man, something's gotta be put together.
Yeah. And I think that the reason you see so many young people involved and active is, I mean, to some degree, they've missed some of the misinformation campaign, right? You know, the disinformation campaign that happened very strongly was probably more in the 80s and 90s. And a lot of these young people were born in 2000, right? I
After
mean,
the
most
Great
of them.
Depression, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, but not only that, they also are very alert to the fact that this is going to affect them. They will be seeing all of the worst case scenarios that have been, you know, have been put forward, and they want to see the best case scenarios. And so they're really vocal about it because they're like, hey, look, we didn't cause this problem, and yet we're going to have to deal with the chaos you've given us. So
Well, you know,
we're going to
in
start
many
speaking
ways,
up.
it's an analogy to the Parkland school shooters, right? When the kids at that high school in Florida, after the shooting, they all stood up and basically took the country by storm because they weren't about to accept the inevitability of another school shooting, right? And at the time, and maybe you remember as well, at the time, this is now, what, 18 months ago or a year ago, they were
A year
talking about
ago,
how
yeah.
most adults have basically learned futility, right? After a certain number of school shootings and nothing happens, then another one happens and you say, okay, well, here we go again. Whereas for these kids, it was new and raw and different, and they spoke out about it and they had some impact. I think to your point, it's much the same with the kids in the Sunrise Movement, right? They are not trained to accept failure by repeated past failures. And they say, hey, by jingo, you know, we got to do this. We're going to do it. We're optimistic, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I hope that we don't become complacent about things. But I can see how that happens. You do get sort of disheartened when you try for things and you push for things and you feel like still nothing happens. And you get very hopeful because it seems like that something's going to happen and then it doesn't happen. It can be disheartening. It can be demotivating in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I guess I encourage everyone to read what they can. Read the McKibben article in the New Yorker; it's very good. But
Yeah.
it is basically this: what happened with Senator Feinstein is this clash of important forces in our society right now, and I don't see one simple single solution, and I don't particularly see any good or bad actors there. I do see people. I think Dianne Feinstein has maybe been around a long time. Right, but
Maybe it's a go ahead.
she certainly, you know, California is one of the leading states in the nation on climate change issues, right? So it's not as if she's Jim Inhofe or anything, right?
Right.
She's a
Well, I mean, you know, I think some of what sort of pushes people away from the Green New Deal, maybe it's a failure of imagination, right? I mean, the Green New Deal is, I heard someone on the Mothers of Invention podcast, which is a cute podcast, but they said that, you know, they called it the moonshot deal. Like it, you know, JFK said, we've got 8 years to get to the moon, and then we made it happen. And it's sort of like that, where this Green New Deal just seems completely impossible. But if we really drive toward it, we're going to be able to do it. And maybe there's just, it seems it's, we don't, you know, people like Senator Feinstein just sort of don't have that moonshot.
Mentality.
They're too disillusioned with the polarization of the parties right now, and it's hard to think about doing something that's really, really hard to do and will take a lot of concerted effort.
Well, I guess one of the things that I thought was relevant to discuss here is that one of the complaints about the Green New Deal and we need to defend all, against all these. But the, one of the complaints about the Green New Deal is that it is a quote-unquote wish list of progressive liberal agenda, right? Give everybody a job, give everybody health care, tack that into – that's extraneous to the climate and clean energy part of the Green New Deal. And I think that that is a conception that needs to be argued against, that the social – and certainly the environmental justice portions of the Green New Deal are critical to the function of the Green New Deal, that it is the basically the fulcrum on which the Green New Deal will be built is the inclusion of all the populations, everyone involved, because we're talking about an enormous economic transition. We cannot afford to let people fall through or fall out of that transition or not be treated fairly in that transition. The transition will be stronger and faster if everyone's involved. So every time someone says, oh, it's just a wish list, they tacked a wish list onto the Green New Deal, I try and put, I mean, I think that should be pushed back on, right?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting concept. I mean, you know, of course, the terms that get put towards it too are it's socialist, right?
Right, right.
And I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I know that, you know, that's the same thing that was said about Social Security, right? And Medicare, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
That it was, that these are socialist issues. And now you kind of can't picture life without them. They've become sort of fundamental and a lot of people really support them, whether they're widely supported. And so sometimes the things that seem extreme at first become genius later on, right?
Well, and to your point, I mean, it's all what you call it. You call it socialism, then everyone gets scared because of all the frames that come up. And that's why the bad guys are using these, you know, epithets, literally, to call something a socialism. When in fact, when you explain what's actually happening, people are, you know, they nod and say, yeah, it's not a bad idea. So I think that as climate hawks and climate activists, we need to talk about the Green New Deal in an honest and open way as being a good thing for the country to combat this, because you know the money's going to come to try and stop the Green New Deal. But one of the, I guess the last thing I wanted to throw in, Mariah, is that, of course, I wouldn't say I'm addicted to Twitter, but I follow Twitter. And the Feinstein thing came up, and Bill McKibben had some comments initially. Of course, he's a very kind guy. But then at the end, sort of after 18 hours or a day later, he put up a tweet talking about how critical it is for progressives not to attack each other and not to create dissension, that there's just too much at stake. Dianne Feinstein is your friend. She's on the same team, right? She may not, we don't have to agree on every single detail. She's, you know, it's not useful to say bad things about her. I mean, I agree completely that we need to push our own elected representatives because, you know, Democrats can be too complacent about stuff because, you know, who you're going to vote for, Jim Inhofe? Of course not, right? Still in all, we need to at least be honest and kind to the people that are on a progressive side and try and understand their policies and argue about policies so that we don't end up with a bitter circumstance come late 2019, I guess it is, right? You'd agree with that, Mariah, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that dissension is important and discussion is important to refine and strengthen ideas, but we do need to have a platform for the next election and we need to have unity to move us forward if we want to succeed, you know, period, right? I mean,
the like, alternative is so much worse.
Yeah, exactly. So right. For sure, being right, unified is helpful.
We'll put it down there. What we'll do is put up some links to what we talked about on the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find the show on the Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. Where you can, I mean, they don't friend anymore. I guess you like things or you sort of join the page. There's lots of interesting stuff. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using almost any of the modern podcast directory distribution applications and, of course, by going to Apple Podcasts. If you want to send us an email, please, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. MassClimateAction, all one word, .net. Podcast@massclimateaction.net. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for your wisdom.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for everyone for listening in. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.